While most of us see the cherry cheeks and red coat, Santa's had to deal with toil and trouble as well. In 1640, the Scottish Kirk, otherwise known as the Scottish Church, actually banned all Yule festivities, including Christmas. And for 100 years, Christmas was banned in Narnia as well. But despite the setbacks, sometimes the highest leaders of the land would reach out and help Santa on purpose. Today's stories were originally told by the Beach Boys, the 1640 Scottish Parliament, the London Illustrated News, Harry Connick Jr., Bobby Helms, and a tradition started by Prince Albert and Queen Victoria in 1848. What you're about to hear has never been told before. You're listening to the 40th episode of Tracing the Path with Dan R. Morris. Chapter 3, The Canon of Santa Claus. Santa couldn't believe it. His longtime dream of bringing children to Christmastown was about to come true. It had been years and years and years, and he almost couldn't contain himself. But he was getting older, and getting around wasn't as easy as it once was. In fact, the Winter Warlock had given him a present 1 year earlier to make his life better. Just so he could watch the elves build the train, he built an entire room of magic snow globes. In fact, if it weren't for the snow globes, the train might not even have been completed. A few years in, the elves he put in charge of the construction, Patch and Bernard, noticed one part of the train wasn't being built very quickly. But it only took one gaze into the snow globe to see that the cotton-headed ninny muggins, who were supposed to be working on the train, were just sitting there. One of Patch and Bernard's most brilliant plans was to build outposts near the train at different locations. Each had a place Santa could visit, see the plans, eat, sleep, and be merry. The one at Sylvan Glen was a kitchen inside a hollowed-out tree that Jesper Keebler ran. The Keeblers liked that place so much, Santa never thought they would return, even after the train was finished. Another outpost was in Mount Oliphant, Scotland, on the land of poet Robert Burns. Scotland was a difficult place for Santa, as Christmas had been banned there in 1640. The Scottish Church had outlawed Christmas as a protest against the Roman Catholic Church. But Robert Burns was one of the few sympathizers of the holiday, and with a great amount of land was happy to help Santa with a train outpost. The only outpost Santa ever actually visited, though, was in the Forest of Bursey. There he met Ak, the Master Woodsman. Ak was taken aback at the scale of Santa's project. It was there Santa learned about some of the risks of the train, like the wolves in Finland and the abominable snowman. He was sort of aware of both of those, but that didn't bother him any more than he already was. And he also learned something fascinating about Ak. Ak had found a human baby in the forest and took it to live with the wood nymphs. Ak told Santa the baby had a pudgy face and a little round belly that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly. Knowing that he himself had been found in the woods by Tante Kringle, Santa thought this might be a sign, and told Ak about his upbringing. Before he left, Ak suggested that he give the baby the name Nicholas, after the first Santa, and asked if they would raise him up with the spirit of giving. It took 60 years for the train to finally come to fruition. But it wasn't just the construction, but the combining of the construction with the magic of Aslan. Bernard and Patch engineered a big push at the end, and the North Pole Express train was done in May of 1788. And to celebrate this momentous moment, Robert Burns of Scotland wrote a song to look back on all the great times they had building the train. He called it Auld Lang Syne, which means 2 days gone by. Santa was moved by the gesture and hopeful Christmas would one day be allowed there again. But for now, the train was operational. The time to raise the world's Christmas spirit had begun. The train did have help from one special person. Going back to Ak in the forest of Burzee, when the train was completed, the baby that Ak had found and let the wood nymphs raise was now 63 years old. They had named him Little Saint Nick, though at 63 it wasn't the title he heard very often. He'd spent his toddler years nurturing the forest with the nymphs. Then when he was in elementary school, he helped gather letters all the children wrote to Santa and brought them to Christmastown. And then as a young man, he had taken interest in the train and had been helping the elves with planning and construction. And now that it was finished, he wanted to know how else he could be of service to Santa. With Santa and the reindeer tiring out, Santa had a decision to make. He had waited so long for this moment for the train to be ready, for his big Christmas with the kids. But he was also getting older, and maybe he'd only get one more Christmas. And so he asked Saint Nick to come to Christmastown. Nick was married to a woman named Rebecca. Together they arrived at the hidden entrance of Christmastown. Santa and Mrs. Claus were ready and waiting, ready to sit down with them. They spent an evening talking about what the Santas had accomplished, what was remaining, and the importance of the Christmas handbook. Santa told Nick one of his first tasks probably needed to be finding new reindeer, which Nick was excited about. But also, it was a clue that he was about to become Santa. And then Santa ceremoniously put his coat on the shoulders of Nick and Rebecca, and with the elves in attendance, declared him to be the new Santa. And old Chris was right. His first task needed to be the reindeer. Since Dooley had created the original sleigh team, he had Dooley take the reindeer out to see which reindeer were still strong enough to make the flight. Lo and behold, the original Dunder and Blitzen were still fiery strong, and seemingly so was Pacer. Dooley was excited, but it had been years since he had spoken with Nock of Lilliput or any of the Laplanders. So with a clean slate, Dooley decided to visit Nell instead. She was the great-grandniece of the first Santa and raised reindeer in the Lapland area too. She was honored and extremely excited to be providing reindeer to Santa. She brought Dooley 6 wonderful reindeer to accompany Dunder and Blitzen. She brought Dasher, Prancer, Comet, Cupid, and 2 female reindeer, Dancer and the youngest reindeer, Vixen. And even though the reindeer situation was under control, Santa was very nervous. This was the first year the train would be bringing children to Christmastown, and it was his first year as Santa. He was starting to think he underestimated the amount of work the train would bring to the elves. On top of the stress of Christmas Eve preparation, the stress of the train itself was incredible. Santa had a makeshift globe room and had magic snow globes scattered on tables so elves could watch all parts of the train. He was still very worried about this. There was an abominable snowman out there, and wolves, and something else called the Grinch. He didn't know much about it, but he hoped they wouldn't be a factor, and he hoped the weather outside wouldn't be frightful. But everything went off without a hitch. The elves were so excited. When the kids boarded the train, the conductor welcomed them by saying, "Welcome to the North Pole Express, the fastest route to Santa from here to Antarctica." Then the train pulled all the way up Santa Claus Lane into the heart of Jingle Bell Square. All the elves, including Bernard, Patch, Yubi, Elwin, Cider, Jingle and Jangle, Dooley, Curtis, and Judy, were waiting for the children. Santa and the elves bobbled a little bit on this first visit. They hadn't quite figured out what they were going to do, but the kids were more than excited to meet Santa. It seemed that's all they needed. In the middle of Jingle Bell Square was a giant Christmas tree. Santa explained that the tree was decorated, just like Chris and Jessica's tree from their forest Christmas Eve wedding. The kids were taken on a tour of the factory and got to pet Pacer. They were there for only a very short while and watched Santa take off in the sleigh. And then the elves sent them home before Christmas morning. Santa's goal for the train now was different than when the idea was conceived. While the original idea was to permanently plant the spirit of giving deep inside the children, now Santa hoped it would go one step further. He hoped that the children would get home, tell their friends about it, and grow Christmas spirit like wildfire. So he hurried to deliver the presents faster than he ever had before, as he wanted to see the outcome. When Santa returned, he and the elves all waited and watched the snow globes to see what the children did when they woke up in the morning. But nothing happened. The kids mostly thought it was a dream and kept it to themselves. They excitedly opened their presents with a smile on their faces and didn't say anything about it again. When it was over, Santa and the elves all breathed a sigh of relief, knowing they had much to do to make the next year better. It didn't do what they wanted, but it wasn't a disaster either. Every year, Santa was excited about the train. But for the first 30 years, it really didn't grow spirit at all. The greatest part is there were now 300 kids around the world who would never grow up to be like Burgermeister or Hinkle. But Santa wanted it to do more. And while he wanted to dedicate all his time to figuring it out, there was always something else that needed his attention. One year, a record number of reindeer gave birth to new little ones. Dunder and his mate had a little guy, Rudolph, just before Christmas. Santa wasn't even sure if Dunder was going to be able to make the Christmas run. Not only did Dunder feel like he might need to stay back with baby Rudolph, but he also became comically frustrated with all the new young reindeer running around. They even created a song about all the reindeer that pulled Santa's sleigh, and they changed Dunder's name to Donner in the song. Yay for Dasher, Dancer, Prancer, Vixen, Comet, Cupid, Donner, and Blitzen. And since it drove Dunder nuts, they loved chanting it. They chanted it so much, everybody just started calling him Donner. And after his son Rudolph had grown up a bit, the other reindeer kids made fun of him, too, and his red nose. So he and another elf, Hermes, actually ran away from Christmastown. And while that was a huge ordeal, their adventure actually solved one of Santa's biggest problems, the abominable snowman. While the abominable hadn't messed with the train yet, Santa still worried about it every year. He just didn't know anything about that scary monster. It turns out that the abominable snowman was really a huge fan of Santa Claus and was neither scary nor crazy. And he had a name, Bumble. Previously, Bumble had lived and worked in a magical place called Monstropolis, where creatures like him lived normal lives. There he worked in the mailroom, but he got banished to the Ice Mountains when he broke one of the mailroom rules. He opened one of the letters. Opening mail was a big no-no in Monstropolis. So when he did, they took him to a room with a door that had a glaring red light over it, opened it, and pushed him out the door into the Ice Mountains. When Rudolph, Hermes, and their friend Yukon Cornelius encountered Bumble, Rudolph's red nose reminded him of the red light above the door, the last thing he saw before being banished. Not a memory he liked. Hermes understood Bumble, because it seemed like Bumble didn't want to work in the mailroom. His dream job was making people happy with snow cones. Hermes knew that feeling all too well, being the only elf who didn't want to make toys, but instead wanted to be a dentist. And Santa, putting together a search and rescue team to find Rudolph and Hermes, was another distraction from the train. But fortunately, it was near Christmastown. Sometimes Santa had to handle things really far away, in places like Bluesville and Southtown, Portland and London. Some good things and sometimes very bad things. One year, Yubi the Elf, who many elves believed to be too chipper all the time, was debating the merits of the naughty and nice list with Alabaster Snowball. Well, to start, Alabaster is the only elf with a degree, and an Oxford degree at that. He was not one to debate with. Yubi loved the idea of the naughty and nice list, though he didn't actually know if it worked. The only real place that honored the list had been Holland. On St. Nicholas Day every year, children would leave their shoes out by the door, and that night, the shoes would either get filled with candy or with coal, depending on if you'd been good or bad. But Alabaster knew of times when the naughty and nice list had really gone awry. He had heard stories of when the ancient Norse god Odin had tried to do the same kind of thing. Odin had ravens hover over all the people to watch who was good and who was bad. But it did the opposite of what he wanted. It scared the kids. On that particular day, Yubi was looking over the naughty list when he determined that everyone in the town of Bluesville was on the naughty list. Not a single nice person in Bluesville. How could that be, he thought. Well, Yubi took the initiative to go down to Bluesville and solve it for himself. After getting there, he learned that the town only had one product to sell. It had unburnable coal, which meant the only thing they knew to do with it was to throw it at each other, which is why they were all on the naughty list. Fortunately, Yubi knew something special about coal. He showed the townspeople how to turn their coal into diamonds, and then helped them create a diamond-studded Christmas tree, and everyone in Bluesville was happy. And when he got back to Christmastown, the name The Happy Elf had already become his nickname. Rudolph wasn't the only reindeer, either, to keep Santa from being able to focus on the train. The elves Jingle and Jangle decided to see what life would be like in the tropics, and to find out if Christmas spirit existed in places without snow. Unfortunately, they took Vixen with them. Vixen wasn't used to the heat, and got sick, and was sent to the vet. But when they tried to take Vixen with them and go home, the town's mayor said they couldn't leave unless they could prove they were Santa's elves and make it snow in Southtown. That forced Santa to go to Southtown to fix the situation. And then in another year, Blitzen got hurt, which made Christmastown worry whether Christmas would happen at all. And one of the elves accidentally announced to the world that Christmas was canceled. And would you believe a dog, who believed Christmas was canceled but wanted to save it, traveled by bus all the way from Portland, Oregon, to Santa's workshop. He tried to convince Santa that he was Olive, the other reindeer, and that he was there to take the place of Blitzen and save Christmas. It only made Santa Claus chuckle, and he put Olive to work. Santa had to work overtime to get the message out to the world that Christmas wasn't canceled. Prince Albert and Queen Victoria of the United Kingdom could see that Santa needed help raising Christmas spirit. They felt that if the royal family were to be photographed in front of a Christmas tree, it would inspire the country to do the same. So Prince Albert asked that a Christmas tree be put up in the family room of Windsor Castle. He thought it should be soft pine, and it should be lit with candles. He also wanted lots of silver and gold to reflect the candle's light. His children joined the fun and hung toys, treats, and necklaces and trinkets from the tree. And then he asked the London Illustrated News if they would like to do a story on Christmas at Windsor Castle. They did, and their 16-page spectacular was viewed all over London, giving way to Christmas trees everywhere. And then it happened. From out of the blue, the most extraordinary thing occurred. Little Clement, well, he wasn't little Clement now. Now he was 44 years old. Clement had been one of the North Pole Express riders, one of the first, in fact. He had absolutely loved the experience and wished the train would show up at his house again. For many years, he lay awake on his pillow Christmas Eve night, waiting for the moment to occur. but it never did. It wasn't until he was 44 years old in 1822 that he'd conjure up the kind of Christmas spirit again. He found himself in a sleigh on a winter's day, inspired to write a Christmas story for his kids. He wrote, "'Twas the night before Christmas, when all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children were nestled all snug in their beds, while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads. And Mama in her kerchief, and I in my cap, had just settled our brains for a long winter's nap. When out on the lawn there arose such a clatter, I sprang from the bed to see what was the matter. Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters and threw up the sash. The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave the luster of midday to objects below. When what to my wondering eyes should appear but a miniature sleigh and 8 tiny reindeer. With a little old driver so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. More rapid than eagles, his coursers they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer, now Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donder and Blitzen. To the top of the porch, to the top of the wall, now dash away, dash away, dash away all. As dry leaves that before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle, mount to the sky. So up to the housetop the coursers they flew, with a sleigh full of toys and St. Nicholas too. And then in a twinkling I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. As I drew in my head and was turning around, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot. All his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. A bundle of toys he had flung on his back, and he looked like a peddler just opening his pack. His eyes, how they twinkled, his dimples, how merry. His cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the beard of his chin was as white as the snow. The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke it encircled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and a little round belly that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly. He was chumby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work and filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk. And laying his finger aside of his nose and giving a nod up the chimney, he rose. He sprang to his sleigh, to his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim ere he drove out of sight, "Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night." And then he read it to his kids at dinner. His kids loved it and wanted him to publish it for other kids to read. But it was for kids. He didn't think it would bring much stature to scholars of Hebrew. So in 1823, he sent the poem to the New York Sentinel and asked them to print it without giving them his name. And the world loved it. Upon reading it the first time, the elves laughed that the poem thought Santa to be a jolly old elf. There was never more frivolity and excitement in Christmastown than the day they read this poem. This was the first time anyone had ever experienced a spirit spike from the North Pole Express. And it wasn't the last. It wouldn't be until 1844 that little Clement Clark Moore would publish the poem in a book, thereby teaching the world his name. But he'd go to his grave never uttering a word that he had met Santa on the North Pole Express. And that was just the first. What was about to come, Santa could have never predicted. Stay tuned for Chapter 4 of The Canon of Santa Claus. Before we get to Chapter 4, however, let's look at the stories behind the canon of Santa Claus. In the 16th century, the practice of putting goodies and shoes outside the doors to celebrate the memory of St. Nicholas began in Holland. It was the first time the concept of the naughty and nice list became popular. And truly, if you were naughty, you'd get coal. In 1963, the Beach Boys celebrated the story of St. Nick in their song, Little St. Nick. In 1640, the Scottish Church did in fact ban Christmas, a ban that wasn't lifted until 1958. In the original poem, A Visit from St. Nicholas by Clement Clark Moore, we see the last reference to Dunder and Blitzen. And after that, after the songs and the reindeer games, he would come Donner. In 1945, Sammy Kahn, a songwriter famous for many of the Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin hit songs, wrote, Let It Snow, Let It Snow, Let It Snow, included in it a reference to one of Santa's fears, the outside weather being frightful. In 1957, Bobby Helms released a song he wrote called Jingle Bell Rock. It is there that we find reference to Santa Claus Lane and Jingle Bell Square. The story of All of the Other Reindeer is from Vivian Walsh's 1987 best-selling book. The London Illustrated News published photos of Prince Albert and the Christmas tree in 1848. While some people believe the Christmas tree originated there, it really began in Riga, Latvia in 1510, where a tree was covered with roses and candles and placed in the city center to celebrate the Yule festivals. You've been listening to the 40th episode of Tracing the Path with Dan R. Morris. Stay tuned for Chapter 4 of the Canon of Santa Claus.